Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
And here we are. It's our second round this week. It's Saturday night in late July. It's Dave Court and Michael Slack. We are the Hour of Truth. We are the State Sovereignty Hour. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. How you doing, Mike?
Doing great. Doing great. Enjoyed listening to Hal talking to Dave during the opening.
Hal was quite a guy, and Dave put him in his place.
He did. I named my first computer Hal.
Did you? Yeah.
Many years ago.
So, we had a good show last night. For you folks that are just tuning in, Mike Slack is going to co-host with me for a while, maybe forever, maybe for just a little while. I don't know. He's kind of a free man. He comes and he goes with the wind. No, I'm just kidding. We're glad to have Mike. He's a great addition to any discussion. And you folks will definitely love coming along and catching Michael Slack as a regular part of the Friday and Saturday night shows. What'd you do today, Mike?
Well, I was up too late last night, kind of hyped after the show. Watched a little TV, slept a little bit late. Ran to town so that I would not have to go next week, and I can spend time promoting the Preppers and Patriots Expo. And
well, what's the Preppers and Patriots Expo?
Well, let's see, for the folks who have not heard before, it's an expo I'm organizing in Springfield, August 16th and 17th. We will have about 30 speakers over 2 days on things of interest to both Patriots and Preppers. Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy and Dr. Caesar, all demonstrating survival medicine. Suturing, Joyce Riley talking about veterans affairs. John Moore on things the government does not want you to know. Mike Evans on restoring liberty. Quite a few folks involved with heirloom seeds, non-GMOs, long-term storage food, tactical training, a wide variety of things that a lot of folks will be interested in. We call it 2 days that can save your life, and I think it is.
2 whole days, that must cost me a fortune. What does it cost, about $300 to go to this thing?
10 whole dollars. It works out to about 70 cents an hour.
$10 at the door, wow.
Days. And it's at the Doubletree Hotel by Hilton in Springfield, Glenstone and Kearney, 9 o'clock to 6 o'clock, both Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, Glenstone and Kearney. So that's for you folks that are out of town, that's great access to I-44, a couple of blocks off the highway there.
I had to add some good news today, too. A fellow named Doug Breathauer, some of the listeners might know Doug. He works with wood gas. And, has a group, I think it's called the Ozarks Biochar, or Biomass
right.
Association.
Yep.
Well, he's going to have his pickup truck that runs on wood gas, basically on burning firewood out there. And he's going to park it on the corner of Glenstone and Kearney, with a sign on one side promoting the expo and a sign on the other side that says, this truck runs on wood, not gas.
Cool.
And I think that'll be a nice attention getter. And, if you've never seen one of these trucks, there are several around the country that run on wood gas. It's really fascinating. It's technology used in World War II with gasoline shortages. And used by some folks today.
A truck that runs on gas.
Miles to the court.
Yeah, a truck that runs on wood instead of gas is a good chance for me to jump in and say to you, progressive or liberal-leaning friends we have out there listening, and I know you're there, you're always there, this is great. This is a great kind of nonpartisan gathering. They're going to talk about a lot of things there that are very dear to both liberals and conservatives, to everyone, really. Like Mike says, saving your life is not something that's partisan. There's going to be alternative energy for you back to the earth folks. Like he said, there's going to be heirloom seeds and somebody talking about suturing up your own wounds when you get hurt, and there's no power and no doctors and the hospitals are all full. So this is great. This is not something that we're promoting as exclusive thing for patriots and conservatives. Everyone's welcome.
Actually, some of my best friends are liberal Democrats, which you might find hard to believe, but I've known them forever.
Yeah.
God bless them. And they're going to be coming out, too. Because there really is more that we have in common than we have different with us.
And the idea here is that there's a day coming when we're going to have even a lot more in common.
That's true.
So, survival does that.
Another speaker, sure, another speaker that'll be there, by the way, will have a different way to use wood for energy in steam engines. And, back in the 1800s, that was revolutionary. So
we had a good time last night. We talked about Amendment 1, the Right to Farm Bill, and we talked about the 3/4 cent sales tax. We talked about MODOC. It was a great show. If you folks missed it, be sure and go back and catch the Comcast of that show. It was fun. I had a good time, and we had a guy called in from California who believes that everyone has a right to farm. I wonder if the right to farm passes, Mike, and my county or designated power so decides, is there anything that the state of Missouri could do to stop me from growing marijuana then?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. But the Farm Bureau says they're going to leave a lot of this up to the courts. I guess we'll see what the courts say.
Yeah.
What
are you predicting on those two?
Predicting on the vote?
Yeah, on the vote on those two that we talked about last night.
Well, I am hoping that it fails, that we have plenty of no votes. I get worried when I see so many vote yes signs out there. Then I take heart when I have so many Facebook posts with vote no on a graphics popping up. But I'd say it's up in the air. Primaries are low turnout elections. It's going to depend on who is the most motivated, which group. And the groups opposing it, there actually are a lot of groups. An awful lot of conservative groups that fear GMOs. A lot of conservative groups that simply have less trust of government and the courts than others, or of the Farm Bureau and a few of the organizations behind it. And there are an awful lot of Democrat and left-leaning folks who are against it. When this was being discussed in the legislature, I actually talked to the senior Democratic senator and asked him to filibuster it. I think he considered it and caved into pressure from the Republican senators that threatened to filibuster his favorite bills, which is why I have been telling people that I think we were betrayed by both parties on this, by both the Republicans and Democrats. But, as far as making a prediction, I really think it's about 50-50 now. And we'll see which group feels the strongest and is actually willing to get out there on a hot August day and vote. Dave, it looks like we have a caller. Have you noticed? I think Dave is over there talking to the caller, but I'm going to introduce some guys. It's Ike Skelton, who is with the group Missourians Against Agenda 21. Ike lives in Lebanon, Missouri, and he was one of the main organizers a year or so ago in fighting against the White River Blue Way. And an awful lot of grassroots groups came together to fight that. We had a lot of help from some of our Congress critters, some of our state elected officials, and a lot of the county commissions across Missouri and across Arkansas. And that was beat. And I know Ike is going to update us on some events with the EPA and the Missouri Department of Natural Resources.
Hey, good evening, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. Want to go ahead and update us on what's going on?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, we've of course come across sometime last month the Missouri Non-Point Source Management Plan for dealing with what they intend on doing with the non-point source pollution, they say. And we've been looking at that real heavy. And of course, the EPA, everybody's probably heard about the Waters of the U.S. Proposal. We actually had a bit of a coup for the grassroots. We had got a conference call together, and we're talking about this DNR plan, and an individual on there that is on a water board let us know that there was going to be a meeting with the head of the EPA, Gina McCarthy, in Columbia at Bradford Farms. We got a bunch of great grassroots folks together there. We showed up probably about 50 strong, and was really insightful as to how our government works, how these stakeholder groups that they talk about work against us sometimes, and how the public is not really involved. They're not even, they don't want us to be involved that much, and it's very, very telling. So we're going to have another meeting with DNR on this non-point source management plan Monday, and I think that'll be enjoyable as well.
Now, is the comment period still going on that?
The comment period for the DNR, no, it is still open for the Missouri Non-Point Source Management Plan through the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. It is still open. We actually got together a conference call. You were on it and a bunch of other folks. Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder helped us out a lot, and a lot of other representatives. They got a letter together and asked that the comment period be extended to August 8th, it got extended to August 8th. So I would encourage everybody to go online. I don't have the link right in front of me, but just go to the Missouri Department of Natural Resources website. You can find it, and leave some comments. Leave what you think about it. Read the draft plan if you can. Find out what's in it for sure, and you'll recognize what's wrong with it as soon as you start reading it. If your listeners have been paying attention to Agenda 21 and what the EPA is doing and the watershed fight, the Blue Way fight, you'll recognize the same stuff.
Now, I'd heard that the DNR was serving as an enforcement arm for EPA and that they had changed the definition of the waters they have jurisdiction over from navigable, such as the Missouri and Mississippi rivers, to any water. Is that correct?
That's what the EPA wants to do. That's where they call this Waters of the U.S. They definitely want to change the name navigable. Look at when you see their draft plan, and that's what this meeting in Columbia was about, and maybe we can talk about that meeting a little bit more in depth. I think your listeners would find it fascinating how this thing was conducted. That's what this meeting was about, was that new plan, Waters of the U.S. plan, and that's exactly what they want to do. And although they, there's a lot of exemptions for farmers, there's not a lot of exemptions for anybody else. So even your ditches could wind up being controlled by the EPA. Very scary stuff. We've got to be on top of this.
The mud hole in my driveway, would they control that?
If there's some way that they could find that it would, be able to leak out somewhere or something of that nature, very possibly. I mean, I don't think they're going to waste time on the mud hole in your driveway, but theoretically, if they wanted to do it, I suppose that's what they'd like to do.
Okay. Now, a member of your group who was there said the EPA director made some comments just kind of blowing this off, or was she calling the folks opposed to it or concerned about it, tinfoil hat wearing folks, or what was it she said?
you know, an awful lot of their entire, how can I say this? The tenor in the room, the type of feelings they were trying to put out was it was in our intention that it sounded like this. We have no intention of controlling this or regulating that. We didn't mean it to be this way. And you were very instrumental in the fight for the Blue Way. And if I remember correctly, that's exactly what the Department of Interior said. Well, we just didn't sell this plan good enough. We didn't explain it well enough. And this is exactly the stuff we were hearing out of Gina McCarthy and the other gentleman that was there with her. Absolutely.
I remember with the Blue Way, they were saying that same thing, and I said, well, why does it say that? It looks as though it was very poorly written. I didn't realize I was speaking with the fellow who actually wrote it at the time. May have offended him a bit, but it was accurate. Very poorly written.
Well, it's written that way on purpose, and you know that, and I think a bunch of your listeners probably know that. It's very intentionally vague. It doesn't lend to anything that you can point your finger to and say, hey, you know I don't want this because XYZ. You have to look at it and say, you know what, I don't want this because I have no idea what it even means. And when you ask them to explain it, they can't sometimes.
All right. How can listeners get more information on this? Does your group have a website? Or?
Well, we do have a website. It's eyesona21.org, and I would defer to Doreen's website's fantastic, pscnews.org. Great website there with good information. And I would encourage people to go directly to the Missouri Department of Natural Resources website, look up the Missouri Non-Point Source Management Plan, and you can download the draft and read it yourself, and I highly encourage people to do that. You know, you've got to educate yourself about this stuff, so you don't have to be an expert on it, but at least get a working understanding of what's going on so you can intelligently defend your liberties.
Definitely. Now, okay, your website is eyesona21.com. That's right?
Eyesona21.org.
.org, okay. Doreen's is PRC News, Papa Romeo Charlie, prcnews.org. She also has a blog called truthfarmer.com, and those are all good places to go to get info. And we were going to talk about a couple of the constitutional amendments that are proposed tonight, and Dave and I were talking earlier, and I told him you had some unique and different takes on those. I might refer to Dave and let him read or summarize the amendments, and go ahead and get your thoughts.
Well,
sure.
Yeah, let's just move right on into it. You callers out there, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835, if you want to get involved. We're going to talk first about Amendment 5, which is the right to carry. Now, this amendment isn't actually going to give you a right to carry. It is doing a couple of things, though, for us. I want to tell you what in my mind is the most important thing about this. And it harkens back to something that I talk about all the time here on the State Sovereignty Hour, and that is, what exactly is the function of a state constitution? We have a lot of people who go out here and stand on soapboxes and say, you know, education isn't a proper function of government. Roads aren't a proper function of government. You know, caring for the aged isn't a proper function of government. And my question to them is always, what is a proper function of government then? What defines a proper function of government? A proper function of government isn't something that came out of the scripture. It isn't something that came off Mount Sinai. It isn't something that comes from the Encyclopedia Britannica or Webster's Dictionary. The proper function of government isn't something that even comes from the philosophers. A proper function of government in our constitutional republic is defined as a government of, by, and for the people. At the state level, that proper function of government is specifically defined by the people. The people of a state write a constitution, and in that constitution, they specifically define for them what is the proper function of government? What is our government supposed to do? That's what a state constitution is. It is nothing more and nothing less than the people defining for themselves what they expect, what they demand from the government, and what they will not allow the government to do. And I enjoy the fact that this specific amendment defines as a proper function of government defending you against any entity that tries to interfere with your inalienable right to carry a firearm. This amendment, and let's just read it real quick before we get into it. That the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms, ammunition, and accessories typical to the normal function of such arms in defense of his home, person, family, and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of the civil power shall not be questioned. Now, this first phrase is basically a rewriting of Article 1, Section 23 of the current Constitution, taking out "but this shall not justify the wearing of concealed weapons." In other words, our current Constitution allows the government to interfere with your right to carry concealed weapons. The state of Missouri has since passed a concealed carry law. Listen now, the original Constitution in its wording didn't forbid the carrying of concealed weapons, but it did not guarantee the right to carry concealed weapons. And so local entities were allowed to keep you from carrying concealed weapons. They take that out in this language. So this first paragraph does nothing more than keep the current wording of the Constitution, but take out the justification of wearing concealed weapons. The rights guaranteed by this section shall be inalienable. Any restriction on these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny, and the state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement. Nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent the General Assembly from enacting general laws which limit the rights of convicted violent felons or those adjudicated by a court to be a danger to self or others as a result of a mental disorder or mental infirmity. That is the gist of Amendment 5. Ike, weigh in on that.
Well, you know... Yes, you're right about our principles of government, what their functions are, and I think that's spelled out very clearly in the Declaration of Independence when they talk about life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The entire function of government is to secure those rights, and it's to secure all of our rights. You're very correct, and our Constitution says that out very, very plainly, and I think this will help quite a bit. A good friend of mine, Ron Calzone, I'm sure you know him, of Missouri First, he explained it to me. The strict scrutiny test. I didn't understand that so much. And then there was a reasonableness test. And, you know, all of our rights, it seems, have some little tweaking that we actually give up. You can't holler fire in a theater without you being penalized for that. You have a right to carry a weapon, but you shouldn't be able to have, if you live in the middle of a city, a firing range in your backyard, and so on and so forth. So there are reasonable things that can be done, but when it comes to firearms, we're requiring through this amendment the Supreme Court or any court actually to look at strict scrutiny. So the first thing they have to look at is, are the liberties of the individual being stripped first? Does that outweigh, and that outweighs, you know, what the reasonableness might be? So I like the amendment. I think it'll strengthen things. And it is definitely a state's rights. It's a pushback against what the federal government is trying to do. And it'll also help push back against what former Mayor Bloomberg is trying to do with his billions of dollars he's putting into anti-gun movement.
Mike?
You know, the state that I think has the most reasonable gun laws is Arizona. In Arizona, if you own it, you can carry it. if you walk onto private property that is posted no firearms, then obviously the property owner's rights come into play. Or government buildings, if they will not allow you. But other than that, you can walk down the street packing. Concealed or open, it doesn't matter. I'd like to see Missouri and all states really have the use the Arizona model at some point in the future. One thing I like about this amendment is I think it moves us a step closer to that. I think a skilled attorney, you notice I didn't say a good attorney, I don't think there is such a thing, but a skilled attorney could probably make a very strong argument that there was no longer a legal justification for the state to require concealed carry permits, that a citizen could simply carry concealed, which I think makes a lot more sense. We recently had a scandal with the Department of Revenue sending the names and personal information of concealed carry permit holders to a third party, Morpho Trust in Atlanta, which was sending it on to Homeland Security. None of their business. And then we had the Commandant of the Missouri Highway Patrol giving that same information to the Social Security Administration. Again, none of their business. They made some changes as to who is responsible. Now it's the county sheriffs that apparently hold that information and not the Department of Revenue. But, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but it looks to me as though that argument could be made, and I like that, and probably someone will make that argument. Another thing that I like about it that you pointed out is the restrictions on those that are judged to be mentally ill, a danger to themselves, self, or others. According to this amendment, you could not simply have a psychiatrist claim someone was mentally ill or the Veterans Administration claim they had PTSD and take away their firearms rights. They would have to, that person would have to go in front of a judge. The judge would have to make that decision. And I would assume that if they were judged to be a danger, that when they reached a point where they were well, they were over the infirmity, or at least had it controlled with medication, they could then go in front of that judge again. That seems good. Though in all honesty, someone who truly has a dangerous mental disorder, all it's going to do is stop him from getting a gun legally, slow him down a little bit. The same way that violent criminals will not necessarily follow existing gun laws. They can, you know, they can go out and get what they want. It just means they might have to pay a little more on the black market. And maybe they're going to have to settle for a different brand or caliber than they might want to initially. But it doesn't really stop them, you know. I also like the fact that it allows restrictions of violent felons but does not mention nonviolent felons. We have a mutual friend who has a felony on his record from an IRS tax charge. Long story, complicated story with the ATF. But he wound up doing a plea bargain because, frankly, he was threatened by the ATF. They were going to file charges against his wife also. He owned a sporting goods store. He bought a shotgun, found out later the shotgun was on the banned list, called the fellow back that he bought it from to tell him that it was not legal and he had to cancel the transaction. And that fellow showed up with an ATF agent. It was a setup. Okay. You know, it's simply not fair that this man is penalized the rest of his life and not allowed to have a weapon to defend himself. Or the kid that, you know, when he was young and stupid, you know, had more than, what, an ounce of pot, whatever it took to make it a felony back in those days, wound up with that on his record and, you know, can't get something to defend himself with, much less a .22 to go shoot squirrel with in the proper season. You know, I just never believed that was fair. Up until 1968, when they passed the Federal Gun Control Act, when someone got out of prison and had served their sentence, if they were not on parole, and they had their gun rights restored as well as their voting rights, I've always believed that, pardon me, if a person commits a violent felony and they should no longer have legal access to firearms, that should be a part of the sentence when they are sentenced. And that a white-collar criminal should not necessarily be penalized in that respect. And so, you know, I like that about it.
Good. Guess who's dropped in, guys? Doreen's here. Doreen, how you doing?
I am doing just fine, thank you.
Thanks for dropping in. We're going to get back to Agenda 21 before we're done here, and we're going to value your expertise in that discussion. But for right now, tell us what you think about Amendment 5.
You know, Amendment 5, I think, has the potential to be very good in general. The thing that I like the best about it is that it requires the state of Missouri to do their actual diligence and defend the rights of the citizens of the state.
Bingo.
So I find that to be, you know, highly positive. Regarding the potential to restore the right to protect themselves to nonviolent felons, I also do agree with Mike quite tremendously that is a good thing. You know, there are a number of people. I mean, you could be 19 years old and charged with fencing stolen goods because you let your friend store his loot in your, like, dorm room or something, right? And then you're a felon for the rest of your life. I don't think that our justice system is actually dispensing justice any longer, and that is a huge part of the problem, you know. So I think Amendment 5 has those potentials for good. I do share a little bit of concern with the Constitution Party for defining normal use of, you know, firearms, accessories, et cetera. But I think that it all kind of depends who's on the bench when that comes into the play, you know.
Well,
and I don't have a lot of faith in that. So that's the one potential distraction that I see, having dealt with entirely too many issues of law in recent history. You know, the way that they define things, either through the courts or through the legislative process or even through the rulemaking process, is an issue and a deep concern.
So,
you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I like it in general, but I have a little bit of concern about it. And I'm not a waffler, you know. I think everybody should open carry. That's my opinion.
An armed society is a polite society.
Yeah, I agree with Jefferson on that. It weeds out the idiots right quick. You know?
It does.
But, you know, I don't, obviously, the Chicago mentality isn't working anywhere. You know, criminals are always going to commit criminal acts. That's just the fact of the matter. Now, the definition of what a crime is, I think, integral to the entire conversation. If you know, if there's no victim, there's no crime. And what we have, unfortunately, with quite a number of felonies, for instance, I heard you mention the ounce of marijuana or what have you, Mike, is that the state says it is the victim of that crime. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, ridiculous.
Who got hurt? You know? That's the thing. Who got hurt? So, you know, anyway, I think in general that Amendment 5 is a positive thing, but I do have a little bit of meh about it. So, whatever that's worth.
I don't share the Constitution Party's concerns about this bill at all. Myself, I'm going to vote yes. I like everyone else has said already, the fact that it defines the function of the state government as defending us against encroachment, mm-hmm, of our rights. I see this as just a slightly softer worded nullification bill than the last one, mm-hmm, they tried to push through. Mm-hmm. In fact, I see the one we talked about last night. The right to farm. I see the only thing that it could possibly do in the positive, if it's passed, and I'm sorry to tell my friends who are against it that it is going to pass.
I want to talk about that if you don't mind.
Well,
quick, but go ahead.
we'll revisit that for a minute. as another quasi nullification bill. I mean, if I want to collect rainwater in a barrel, can I take this amendment to court with me when the federal government or the EPA comes down and tries to tell me I can't? If I want to raise hippopotamuses and breed hippopotamuses in my 200 acres, can I take this amendment to court when the federal government comes down and tells me I can't? I say yes.
Amendment 5?
No, we're back to Amendment 1 now, the right to farm.
Okay.
So I see it too as a no, Amendment 5 wouldn't protect my hippopotamuses or my rainwater.
All
I don't
right.
think.
All right. Well, I was curious.
I mean,
but your hippopotamus could pack.
Yeah. Unless I'm prepared to go out and defend my hippopotamuses when someone comes and tries to take them back from me. So I do see this as a slightly more civilly worded nullification act than what we tried to push through last time. I had some problems with the last nullification bill that we tried to push through and then that we tried to override. They got me in a little bit of trouble with my good friend Ron. But I like this bill. I don't share the fears of what might happen in 15 years when some court might try to do something that someone doesn't like. I see as a counter to that what the Constitution Party stands for, and that is a constitutional republic. When some judge decides that people who have PTSD as a blanket group of people can't carry, then we go back to our legislature and we task them to define that term. We task them as cases come up to nullify court decisions the way they're supposed to. That's what the Constitution is all about. That's what the Constitutional Republic is all about. That's what the representative democracy is all about. And that's what the Constitution Party is all about. So I see that argument in their case as arguing against their own principles, as saying we want a constitutional republic, but we don't want it to work. I love the strict scrutiny. I think it's a strong point in here.
Are we back on the gun bill now?
We are.
Are we back on Amendment 5? Okay, I don't know if we were still on farm or Amendment 5.
No. I probably confused the issue by throwing in Amendment 1 as kind of a as kind of a also nullification bill, but I like it. I'm voting yes. I think we're all kind of in favor of that. I think it's plenty good. I mean I really like it. I don't just lean for it. I really like it.
What other amendment would you like to have? Amendment 5, it sounds like we're all in pretty good shape there, and let's not get into Amendment 1 too much, but what about 7?
7 is what we talked about last night. That's the three-quarters of sales tax, isn't it?
We know that's a loser right there, right?
That one is going to be turned down. But if you missed last night's show, let's review Amendment 7. It's a 3/4 cent sales tax. The big selling point for this by the legislature is that it actually comes under the control of the legislature rather than being funneled around the legislature to MoDOT, and it goes for transportation, quote unquote. Although in the wish list from MoDOT, we already see that a good sized chunk of this is going to the greenways and bicycle trails, which are quote unquote transportation and quote-unquote, Doreen and Ike, Agenda 21 items.
They were trying to bribe the county commissioners by sending them plans for improvements in their areas.
Yes.
In my county, it was full of a bunch of little things nobody cares about or wants, and the one thing they'd like, widening Highway 63, won't happen for at least 10 years.
Wasn't even on the list.
So,
My argument against 7, quite frankly, my friends, is bigger. My argument against 7 is that we need to defeat this. We need to go back to our legislature, and I'm going to be working on this. I hope we can work together on this to find some brave soul who will sponsor and push legislation to propose a constitutional amendment. I think we need to radically change the Missouri Constitution. I think we need to radically change the way MoDOT is defined in the Missouri Constitution. I think no executive bureau, and this is why we find ourselves where we are, begging for more and more and more money to fix the roads and bridges, which are defined in our Constitution as a proper function of government. I think no executive department should have unfettered, unappropriated access to any taxpayer money. We've got this huge, huge chunk of money, tens of millions of dollars from fuel taxes and road taxes and sales taxes on vehicles that goes directly without any appropriation, without any oversight from the legislature, without any hands on it from anyone that we elect to manage our money, going directly into the coffers of an executive bureau. We need to fix that.
I want to call it the Give MoDOT Adult Supervision Bill.
Yeah. Ike, what do you think about it?
You know, I like that idea. I'm not an expert on how MoDOT is funded or anything, but I'll defer to you. And if that, I know they get the money from gas taxes, but if it goes directly to them and there's no oversight from the legislature, I definitely have a problem with that. I wanted to think about this. You know, the government has put itself or us in the position that we're in. We all know that first the federal government fleeces the entire country like an embezzler of a corporation. They first skim everything off the top, and then they'll hand it back to the states if the states kiss a little bit of rear and do it just the way they want to and go through the hoops and loops. Then they'll, through their benevolence, give our own money back. Well, then they come out with these CAFE standards and other meddlesome things that the government continuously does into our private market system and creates vehicles that, frankly, most people don't want, that the manufacturers have to somehow squeeze the cost into over other vehicles so that those that have to have trucks and things of that nature, they cost a whole lot more. And they continue to meddle with these things. Well, now they've got people using less gas because of these efficient cars and the fact that the economy is in the tank, so we're not generating enough gas taxes anymore. The government's meddlesome hands have gotten us all wrapped around and put right back into the situation we are. And I don't like it much at all. I'm, if you couldn't tell, maybe just a little bit livid about all of it. And then to top it all off, the money, as you talked about, for bike trails and all this other
right.
garbage up at the East-West Gateway. And look, at MoDOT had millions of dollars. It's even, I've got the documented evidence of it. They got millions of dollars from the federal government. And you know what it said? It said this could be used for the enhancement of your traveling and transportation experience. But it specifically said that the money could not be used for buildings or repair of roads. It
right.
blew my mind. That's the only thing MoDOT should be concerned about is roads and bridges, period.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Doreen.
Okay.
You're going to vote for
anyone who doesn't know which group. For anyone who doesn't know which group MoDOT is, that's the group you see on the side of the road where one man is working and three are supervising him.
Sure.
But you know they care. But you know they care.
Yeah, because they have those signs all along the road that says MoDOT cares, wear your seatbelt, it's a law.
That's right, because they spent $10 million of that money on those on these signs, and now they need some money to fix the roads and bridges. Doreen, you said you're going to vote. You said you're going to vote for it.
Oh, not a chance. Not a chance. I think, you know, even with legislative oversight, it's irrelevant. Whenever the government gets the power to tax, they have the power to destroy, period, end of story. And that's what this will be. It's supposedly a 10-year temporary tax. When have we ever seen that? You know, yeah, I mean, it's the biggest laugh, and it's like I got a promise from a politician. You know, it's an absolute joke. If MoDOT cannot do its job with the funds that they already have, then perhaps the structure of MoDOT needs to be looked at, and perhaps how they manage their budget needs to be looked at, not give them more. Throwing more money at problems never fixes the problem. You know,
exactly.
And it's a general rule of thumb. I mean, look at the Department of Conservation. They got that 1/8 cent sales tax. Well, they're like, what, I think they're in the top three, at any rate, of all of the states for Department of Conservation. They have the most revenue. They don't even have to ask the legislature for money. And then they are untouchable, you know. And
yep.
I have yet to see a tax that was temporary ever remain temporary.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think it's absolute garbage. And as far as the greenways and all of that go, you know, I don't think that bike trails are necessarily a bad thing, but I think they ought to be paid for by the people who want them.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know? That's what I think. It's like, if you want it, then you pay for it, and you decide if you're going to charge admission or what have you to maintain it. That's your deal. The roadways, however, as you mentioned, are part of the Constitution. Bikeways are not part of the Constitution
right.
in the state of Missouri. So, you know, and neither are horse trails or, you know, ticks. So they need to just leave us alone. That's all there is to it. You know, I honestly, I don't know anyone who agrees with this, but evidently there are a few out there.
According to all the radio advertisements, the police and firefighters agree with it.
Well, okay, what's their kickback on it?
Oh, well, you know, safer roads makes it easier for them to do their job.
You think?
Yeah.
I doubt it. Okay, well, you know, I
heard it on the radio, so it has to be true.
It must be true, right? That and Obamacare, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. Yeah.
Well,
I believe everything they say.
There's been a tendency
in past years for ads to come out showing that police departments were in favor of more gun control, but it tends to be the chiefs of police, the bureaucrats, who are for more gun control. The average cop on the street is not. And many of my friends are retired cops or active duty cops in this area, and everyone I know is against this MoDOT thing. Basically, the attitude is make them be responsible with the money they've got now.
And that's you know, and that's I refuse to get angry, as many of my friends and some of you do, at the legislature for even putting this on the ballot. You know, it is a legitimate function of the legislature when they feel like they need more money. And in fact, in Missouri, it's a requirement after Hancock that they put that on the ballot and ask you for more money. There are things that government costs, and when the legislature thinks they need some money, it's a valid ask for them to come to you and ask for more money. But it's just as valid for us to say no. That's
right.
The important part. It is just as valid for us to say, we already give you $23 million a year. What the hell are you doing with it? It's just as valid for us to say no more money until you show us that you can handle the money that we already give you. I think that it's just time. It's time for us to say no. I mean, I voted against here in Springfield, the school wanting to increase the tax levy to put air conditioners in all the schools. I mean, the money was specifically targeted. It was specifically designated to air condition the schools, but I voted no. You get enough money to do that now. Build a few less new football fields and air condition your schools.
Mm-hmm. That's sacrilege to some people, build fewer football fields.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. Well, use the ones that you have.
Yeah.
Make do, you know, was the old depression saying. Use it up, wear it out, make it do or do with it. There you go.
So,
well, guys, let's just spend a few minutes, if we could, revisiting Amendment 1. I know Doreen has some strong opinions on that, and Ike probably does too.
Okay.
Doreen?
Amendment one, listeners, is the right to farm. It wasn't on the agenda tonight, so I don't have the text in front of me, but basically it states that agriculture is a great thing in our country, and that Missourians, farmers and ranchers, have a right to engage in farming practices. Go ahead, guys and woman.
Do you want me to jump in first, Mike? All right. Well, here's the issue with Amendment 1. I mean, first of all, we have to look at what the potential effects of this are, and you always have to look at potential effects, and you always have to look at the genesis of the thing. The genesis of this particular amendment was to protect forever in the Missouri Constitution modern technology in agricultural practices. Okay, what does that mean? That means biotech. What is biotech? Genetically modified organisms, both plant and animal, as well as industrialized, consolidated, vertically integrated agriculture. Now, what vertical integration is what is typically practiced now in the hog and chicken industries. That's where the farmer builds the barns according to the corporation specs. He has to do all of the work, and the hogs or the chickens that are there are actually the property of the corporation, and they tell him how to do and when to do what. So the farmer is effectively a serf. Now, that is the quote-unquote modern model of agriculture, and it's incredibly destructive on a number of levels. It's destructive to farming. If you look at the consolidation aspect since 1980, it's incredible. It's like dairy farmers have been knocked down by 50 to 70%, depending on whose numbers you believe. Cattle and ranchers, as far as cattle ranchers go, been losing close to a million of them every 3 years, okay? Now, beef is kind of high currently in the store, so the people who have managed to stay in business are doing okay right now, all right? But, you know, the fact is that the model that we have is a destructive model, and it's not only destructive for farmers and ranchers, it's destructive for consumers, because you end up with this massive consolidation that is against federal law. In the antitrust and anti-monopoly acts, they're not being enforced. The people who have supported this bill have never, not one time, stood up against consolidation, even by a foreign corporation such as JBS, which is the largest meat packing group in the world, and they're from Brazil. They happen to buy up Pilgrim's Pride Chicken here. They've never stood against consolidation. They have never stood for market access in what people think of the term. It's like access to market where they can ask fair price for their product. Market access is actually defined by the USDA through the federal documents all the way up to the international as the ability to sell into international markets. Okay, that's market access. So what we have in Amendment 1 was designed to protect biotech, genetically modified plants and animals. Mike Flack and myself were engaged in numerous conversations with these people, and they refused to remove that verbiage, okay? And they refused to allow farmers to have the freedom to sell their products to those who want. So the whole thing, Missouri Farm Bureau is good on some things, particularly on issues with the EPA as far as freedom goes and as far as land use goes. They are typically good on those issues, and they are typically horrific on actual farm gate cost issues. Farm Bureau is a huge proponent of the free trade agreements. That's what they want. The consolidation factor is huge. Now, this is my passion. All I wanted to do was farm, okay? That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be sweaty and stinky and work really hard every day, okay? But they won't let you because they control the market, so you don't have the access to it, so you can't make a living doing it unless you kowtow to their regulations and their failed model, you know? That's the issue. You want to do good food and sell it in your local environment, you're stuck. So
how exactly does Amendment 1 protect that type of farming?
It's a broad blanket.
Type of farming you'll have?
Go ahead.
Here's the thing. You've got to look at the genesis and who the people are who are the money pushers behind the amendment. The amendment came out, and it's modern technology, okay?
I know that, but that language isn't there anymore.
It's irrelevant because that's what they want, and if people don't know, Farm Bureau is the fourth arm of government within the state of Missouri. I've been at blanket parties with Farm Bureau up at the state legislature. If a legislator goes against Farm Bureau, it's like, you know, they just did something extremely vile in church, okay? Now, they are pushing for it, and they have been pushing for it, and Farm Bureau is, and Monsanto, and Cargill, and the corn growers, and the soy growers, who are all part of the genetically modified complex, are the biggest funders for this amendment. So
But the question, Doreen,
that's who it will end up protecting.
But
our judges are elected.
The question, Doreen, is you want to farm, you want to grow some corn, you want to grow 20 pigs, you want to grow some beans, you want to take them down to the farmer's market and sell them to your neighbors. What does this amendment do to either help or hurt you specifically?
Okay. I'll explain it to you. And it isn't initially, I think it might be very helpful for urban farming, okay, because urbanites ostensibly could have, you know, 6 or 8 hogs in their backyard and their neighbors couldn't do anything about it unless they had planning and zoning within their county, okay? So initially, I think it could be beneficial to, you know, my type of farming, which is better than organic. Okay, I don't jump through 3,000 page hoops to get that. But it will end up implementing planning and zoning in every county in the dang state because it will have to. Otherwise, you're gonna end up with somebody who has a quarter of an acre within city limits that has a constitutional right to farm. And whatever they want to farm, you know, if it harms their neighbors, literally, I'm not talking pretend, it will create a problem that will then bring about planning and zoning. Now,
Does not Article 6 give local municipalities the authority to regulate farming within a municipality's limits, the city limits?
Not really. It's about counties. And the way that Article 6 works right now, there's only St. Louis, Jefferson City, Kansas City, and Springfield that have that capacity. Okay, now they have planning and zoning, in effect. And that's what it'll bring to the entire state.
But what Ike is saying, Doreen, is that that is already in the entire state. It just happens to be...
No.
It just happens to
no.
be...
It
no, just happens...
It isn't.
It's,
well, and you know, Doreen...
It just happens to be that it exists at the city level in only four cities. It exists at the county level everywhere else.
No, not really.
No, it doesn't.
Not every county in Missouri, David, has planning and zoning, and I'm 1,000% against county planning and zoning if we can get away from that. And so let's not confuse these issues. But I don't know. It's interesting that is the first time I've heard that it will have to implement planning and zoning throughout the state so that. Counties could regulate farming. I would hope that if that were to happen, I would hope the grassroots movement could stay, because I have to tell you, this amendment is dividing an awful lot of people in the grassroots movement, and I pray no matter which way this bill goes, or even how we all talk about it when we talk about it to each other, that when the vote is over, regardless of whichever way it goes, we all continue to stick together and work together on issues that we absolutely do agree on. So that's the first thing I want to see come out of Amendment 1. But
You know, I would like that as well, but I don't think that is what it is designed to do. It isn't designed to bring us together. It is designed to divide us, and it is also very crafty. What you have to do is you have to look at the money, and you have to look at the effects of that money, and a lot of this stuff is going to be determined in a couple of capacities, either by courts, by the legislature, or via the bureaucracy, i.e. the Department of Agriculture, et cetera, through expanding their definitions process. Now, how much sway do the grassroots carry with those groups? You know, that's the issue. It's like judges are elected. They have election campaign funds. That's an issue.
What?
Money do we give them compared to Monsanto or Cargill? You know, main sponsor and the House received pretty large campaign contributions from Monsanto.
Are we opposed to this legislation because Monsanto is in favor of it?
I'm opposed. No.
Okay. All right. So does that have any bearing on our opposition or favor of this? Because I could as easily say that I think this is a good thing because HSUS, who all farmers hate as well, is spending money to defeat it.
Not much. You know,
a little bit more than Monsanto, Doreen.
No, look at Monsanto's campaign contributions, David.
About $300 per legislature. Almost every legislator in the state of Missouri got $300 from Monsanto.
Except for the ones that went up to the federal level.
that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a state of Missouri amendment. $350,000 HSUS has put into advertising against this thing.
Well, the only advertisements I'm seeing are for it. And that's, you know, 1.5-minute radio ads, and I didn't see it because I absolutely hate television, but I guess they're doing television ads for it now.
Well, they're not. HSUS isn't going to spend a lot of money out here in the rural areas trying to defeat this amendment. They will put all of their money into Kansas City, St. Louis, and Springfield. So it's very possible you won't see any commercials out here in this area.
And my only argument here is I personally don't give a rat's behind how much money HSUS spends or how much money Monsanto spends, because I don't vote based on, you know, I've got a good, and I said this last night, one of my very, very best friends hates the guts of Rex Sinkfield. But if Rex Sinkfield came down and spent money favoring the fair tax, this person would be against the fair tax just because. I want to make sure we're not.
Well, that's a foolish attitude.
Okay.
It's a foolish attitude,
but,
you know. I mean,
Doreen,
HSUS, in this case.
The problem, Doreen, is
right.
that's all the discussion I'm hearing right now. That's all the discussion I'm hearing is Monsanto, HSUS, Monsanto, HSUS, and
okay.
Let's
talk about the real issue with Monsanto and why I'm so against them. This has to do with markets as well. It has to do with markets and consolidation and control of markets. That's the issue. So if you're an economic freedom person, you need to be against this amendment because the way that it will be used will be to further consolidate and control agriculture, which, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I personally don't know anyone that can live on prana, you know, air. Everybody has to eat. Now, whether or not we have a choice in what we choose to eat or if we have a choice in what we choose to grow depends upon where we put our money, things that we value on a day-to-day basis. We can't fight anything else if we can't eat. And we can't fight anything else if we're sick. Now, Monsanto is 85% owned by Pfizer, a drug manufacturer. Okay? That's important information. People should be cognizant of it. Now, HSUS is evil on a stick. The guy said that an ant has as much right to live as his son. Okay? They are a problem, but they are not a problem that we need to change the Missouri Constitution for. What we need to do is educate our sheriffs and our representatives and our county commissioners on the fact that HSUS actually doesn't save many animals, and their objective is the consolidation of farming to have no animal ownership. They don't want any livestock agriculture. So that's their objective.
Okay. Now, here we are. Here we are. Here we are again. Is Doreen, I want to farm. I want to be a family farmer. I want a farm that I can pass on to my son and daughter. I want a small plot of land where I can grow food and where I can go to the farmer's market. Does this amendment help me or hurt me? Forgetting Monsanto and HSUS, does this amendment help me or hurt me, or neither? Is it just an innocuous piece of paper?
Go ahead.
I was just going to point out that when we were talking to the sponsors of this, over a year ago, we had an alternative piece of legislation Doreen wrote that we suggested they use in place of it or add on to it after some changes. And that legislation was introduced this last session by Mike Moon, passed out of committee but was never put to a vote for the full House, thanks to the fellow that's going to be Speaker of the House next time. What's his name? Lyle, is it? Which I thought was really atrocious. It should have been put to a vote. But Doreen, could you explain the alternative we gave them? Because that relates directly to Dave's question.
Well, deal, and I don't have it directly in front of me, and I do believe that in law that language is important, but effectively it would allow Missouri farmers to sell directly to consumers with no interference by agencies, and that there would be still, in effect, a willful negligence thing. So a person actually committing a crime, you know, knowing that something was subpar and selling it to somebody, that would be a crime still, okay? But you would be able to directly sell, and that the state of Missouri would effectively do everything within its power to enhance the capacity of farmers to preserve seeds, to maintain livestock breeding lines, and to support small family-style agriculture, that, you know, actual hands-on agriculture, not, you know, GPS-coordinated spraying from crop dusters, but hands-on agriculture, and that would be forever protected, and the capacity to have a market for your product would be protected as well. They dismissed that out of hand.
Didn't dismiss it out of hand. They actually took it to committee, and it was killed. In the committee by the.
Well, the Amendment 1 supporters dismissed it out of hand, and then the next session, Mike Moon proposed it.
Yeah, Mike and I spent an entire hour on that piece of legislation here about 3 months ago when it was being heard in the committee, and. And it's a good piece of legislation. It was an outstanding piece of legislation. I wish it had passed. And maybe what we need to do with that piece of legislation is get it back into the chamber in the form of an initiative that would, like this, go to the people and bypass the committees and the legislative process and could be voted directly on by the people. But my point is that piece of legislation isn't on the ballot here in 2 weeks, and we do have a piece of legislation on the ballot. I want to farm. I want to grow crops. I want to pass something on to my children, and I want to go down to the local farmer's market and sell my corn. Does this amendment help me, hurt me, or neither?
It will hurt you as soon as it goes to court.
How will it hurt me as soon as it goes to court? I don't have a crystal ball to know when it's going to go to court and what the court is going to decide. How will it hurt me when it goes to court?
Okay, here's the issue. The model for the vertically integrated type of agriculture that I was talking about, predominantly hogs and stuff, you got to listen to this. Because it's important. You got 10 acres out in the country, all right? There's a 10-acre plot for sale next to you. And then Smithfield buys it up, and they load it up with hogs, and you can't live on your property any longer. And Smithfield has a guaranteed right to farm, so they buy up your property. And then the next property down the line also becomes uninhabitable by the people who live there. And Smithfield, since a corporation is a person, has the right to farm, and then they buy up the next one. And that is what the corporate vertically integrated structure of agriculture is doing.
That's fascinating that you bring that up, Doreen, because some other individuals, I'm going to use their name because they're not on the air here with us, down in Springfield argue against this amendment because we already have the right to farm. So your argument, right, well, then your argument there is because Smithfield could buy that 10 acres right now and put hogs on it, and you couldn't stop them from farming there today.
No, Ike, you misunderstand. We have a law in effect, as do all of the other states, 50 of them, not 57, that states that nuisance lawsuits cannot be brought against those who have been farming in that place already. Okay, that's the law that we have. So if you have an existent farm and then somebody moves in and doesn't like the fact that you fertilize your fields with manure and it stinks for a week or two in, you know, early April or so, they can't file a lawsuit against you because of that. That's the current protection that we have. I would argue that we already have the right to farm under the Missouri Constitution, and that we have the right to enjoy the products of the industry of our labor. Okay,
what
so I would argue that we have that right
what
there.
What you argue, Doreen, is that you have the right, but Smithfield doesn't.
No. No, what I want to see expanded upon is the right of private property owners, not corporations that have no personal culpability and have the capacity to legally avoid personal culpability and yet have been defined as persons, okay?
Okay.
That's what I want to avoid.
Who defined them as persons?
The Supreme Court.
Why? For what purposes?
Mike?
Citizens United.
Right.
But it was defined narrowly as a freedom of speech and campaign donation.
And I sit here week after week after week, and I say one of my favorite things. And we're chasing rabbits now. We're chasing rabbits now with this corporations aren't people's thing, but I've got to get this in there. There is no difference, zero difference, between a conservative and a liberal. Neither wants less government. They both just want their government. All right? The conservatives are the ones standing up screaming that corporations have all the right in the world to free speech, to give as much money as they want to a political campaign. The Koch brothers have all the right in the world to finance and fund federal campaigns. But then they're the ones saying corporations aren't people when Smithfield wants to move in next door.
I never said that about the Koch brothers. I think that we absolutely need election reform. We do not have representative democratic governments any longer.
I've always agreed with you that corporations weren't people. But here's my question, and this goes back to what we're talking about. And some listeners are starting to log off now because they're a little confused by some of the talk that's going on. I want to tell you, okay, I own a company that cans green beans and puts a label on them and sends them out to the supermarket. Now, what I do is, 15 or 20 years into this process, I say, I could actually make more money. I could actually profit myself a little better. I could actually benefit from capitalism if I also owned the method of transporting the green beans from the field to the place where I can them. So I'm going to expand my operation. I'm going to buy trucks. And then 10 years after that, I say, I could actually make a little bit more money. I could actually make this capitalist system work for me if I owned the green bean. If I made a contract with a farmer to grow me a certain number of green beans and to deliver them to me by a specific time, if I owned the very green bean. And then I say to myself, I could actually buy some fields and hire people to grow me green beans. And I could grow green beans, transport green beans, can green beans, and sell green beans. Doreen, at what level do you stop me? At what level do you say you are not going to be allowed to do that?
It's established via mechanisms for antitrust.
You can do the same thing and compete with me. You can own a green bean from birth to can, and you can compete with me. I am not monopolizing. I am not antitrusting. I am not price fixing. I'm saying, Doreen, do the same thing as me, and let's see who wins.
I don't care so long as the antitrust and the monopoly laws are actually enforced, because those were actually good laws that actually inspired free market capitalism and created competition, but they're not enforced. So if you do that, you fund it, and you don't control the people who make the rules, the regulations, and the laws that allow you to do that, then frankly, I don't care. Go, man.
So,
okay.
So what you're saying is that crony capitalism is a bad thing. I agree with you. Companies buying the government is a bad thing. I agree with you. And then you're trying to say Amendment 1 is a bad thing because of crony capitalism and because companies buy governments. Well, I'm sorry, but we could throw out almost everything we try to do based on that, based on what some court might do in the future, based on what's happened in the past. I want to know without
any reference. How about based on the subject matter?
I want to know without any reference to Monsanto or HSUS, without any reference to anything, if I want to grow green beans and sell them at a farmer's market by the bushel, does this amendment help me or hurt me?
Like I said...
Go ahead, Doreen.
Go ahead. No, anybody go ahead.
Initially, I think it won't hurt.
Okay.
Initially.
Will it help?
Down the line, I think it... No, I don't... Initially, there may be... here. And perhaps through that, there may be something positive that could happen. I kind of doubt it because I've seen entirely too many things that go through legislative process and all ballot initiative process, i.e. the 1/8-cent sales tax, that end up going bad. You know, so, I mean, I think we ought to enforce the Constitution that we have and have the right to profit from our labor and not protect particular segments of the populace over all other segments of the populace. That's what I think.
Mike.
You know, is it going to hurt you? Initially, no. Ultimately, yes.
I'm also really curious as to why the ballot language says citizens, but the actual language of the amendment says farmers and ranchers. And there are some other differences, too.
Yeah.
You know,
good point,
we're not voting, you know, we're not reading what we're voting on. Basically, we're reading something else they're giving us that I believe is deceptive. And, you know, I cannot think of a single positive thing that would come out of this amendment. There is a claim that it would protect farmers from something we're not allowed to mention, Dave. But I've never seen evidence
what
that
is
it would...
Oh, yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, and when we asked the sponsors of this why they didn't just write a law, a normal bill, not a constitutional amendment, directly addressing that group we can't mention, they told us that it would not pass. They did not do it because they could not get it to pass the legislature.
Right.
So to me, there has been deception all along in the process, and I do not want to reward bad behavior. I don't want to pass an amendment because they were deceiving us and admitting it.
Okay.
I think there was a big scare all the way across the country with HSUS and all their other different operations, PETA and all the, and Doreen and I and all those that study Agenda 21
know that eventually
they don't want anybody to really have meat. They don't want them to eat meat. The farming's got to be a particular way. I understand that, but I think what we tried to do here in Missouri is we tried to be proactive and say that we have an extra layer of protection here against those outside entities. And, you know, I don't think we're ever going to know if that is a good layer of protection until it goes to court. And unfortunately, you don't know that about any amendment or any protection until it goes to court and it's tried. What I don't see in this bill is the scary part that a lot of people try to bring up. A lawyer and skillful legislators that can write and people that can write words and put them together can twist just about anything that exists. And, you know, so we can't just look at, well, somebody might use it against us. Well, you know, they could use any amendment or anything, any kind of law against us that we want to or they want to. It's kind of like you can sue anybody you want to for anything. It may never get anywhere, but you can still do it. So I think that we're seeing some folks are maybe looking at this and seeing some bad stuff there that just isn't there unless there's a true effort to try to make it happen. And And I also think on a bigger scale that we should have this conversation in the future, because I think there is a place for all type of farming. I think there's a place for the huge corporate farm that has, you know, thousands of acres and uses, you know, these humongous combines and so on and so forth, and has to have migrants come in from Mexico and so forth, all the way down to the person that has, you know, a little bigger garden than maybe they need for themselves and want to be able to take food to a farmer's market. And I think there's room for all of that in between. And, you know, if Amendment 1 protects that a little bit, or if it could be another tool to defend us against from those who would like to take our farming rights away from us, then I'm okay with it. And I know that that flips me with some other folks, but that's where I see this amendment going, and I'll vote for it.
Okay.
If you're assuming that all types of agriculture are equal, I can't agree with that.
No,
that if I were
I
going to,
equal.
It would have to come with. No, it would have to. When you say there's a place for all types, then
I'm
assuming
so.
You're okay. I've got to have labeling and transparency. I've got to know what is a GMO and what is not. What has been drenched with Roundup and what is not.
I'll go for that. I'll agree with that. I agree with that.
Okay. Well, me too. Yeah.
If someone wants to eat poison, it's their choice.
Yeah. Yeah, when we have the march against Monsanto here in Springfield, once a year, when we carry around signs and raise hell and ask for fair labeling, and listen, folks, I'm a libertarian. I don't believe the federal government belongs in any of it. I don't believe the federal government belongs on the side of a pack of cigarettes. I don't believe the federal government belongs. I don't believe the Constitution allows for a Food and Drug Administration, quite frankly. But
it was the Bureau of Chemistry.
But look, we live in a reality, and they do. So by God, if we're going to put on the side of a can of green beans what kind of dye and what kind of salt is included, we could sure as heck put down there that it's got Roundup in it.
You bet.
So
you bet.
So I don't have a problem with that. I'm no, don't get me wrong, Doreen. I'm not here to defend Monsanto. I'm not here to say that Monsanto is a great thing or that anything that Monsanto does is a great thing. I am here to say, as the last word on this before we jump into a break, that I do agree with Ike on one thing. I hope when this is over, that this is and I led with this last night when Mike and I were starting out on this, and then I think we're going to be done talking about this because there are other things on the ballot, and this is all I hear or see talked about right here.
Two more things.
I hope when this is over, and I flash back, Ike, to the thing that was really raising some rancor within the conservative/right-of-center groups last year on whether or not St. Louis should have control of their own police force. I mean, we had some name calling,
mm-hmm.
we had some splits, we had some rifts, and then we all came back together when it was all said and done. And I'm optimistic that when this is over, one way or the other, that we'll all refocus on the important things like whether veterans should have a damn lottery ticket.
Oh yeah, that works out good.
So here we go, folks. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about a lottery ticket for PTSD.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Jim Crow climb, come springtime, so let me hear you say,
We've had a lively and spirited discussion. We've used up most of our time. We've got about 20 minutes left. I want to talk for a minute, and actually 20 minutes is more than enough time to be spent on whether or not we need a specific designated lottery ticket, all of which the profits go to veterans. Ike, my man, you're a veteran. What do you think of that?
You know, Mike and I talked about this earlier, and we brought up a couple of different things. You know, is it exploiting veterans? Are we going to do what happened with education that, you know, if this does go through, are they then going to pull the funding from general revenue that helps veterans right now in the state of Missouri and let this lottery ticket replace it? You know, I don't really know. I think one of the bigger issues that we have, and again, I, before veterans want to stab me to death, I'm an 8-year Army veteran, and you know, I served my country because I wanted to. I believed it was a duty. I felt that I could learn a trade. I went in for auto mechanics. I felt that it would help me grow up and some other things, and I just grew a little older. I haven't grown up yet, but so I did. I did it for some personal reasons, some not so personal reasons. And the government doesn't owe me anything anymore. You know, I don't have a service-related injury. I wasn't in war. I wasn't wounded. And, I don't need anything else from the government just because I'm a veteran. I'm not really big into the carve-outs, you know, the extra 5 points you get for being a veteran on a state employment exam and things of this nature. I know it's nice to do things for veterans, and I think we've swung all the way from spitting on our troops returning from Vietnam to now to the point where, you know, it's almost obligatory to thank a veteran for their service. And again, it's kind of a tough thing for me, but I fall a little different on some of that issue as maybe others might. Is this going to bring extra money into the veterans, helping veterans here in the state of Missouri? I'm sure it will. Again, it's another one of those things that I don't know what I'll do with it when I step into the booth, honestly.
Mike.
I'm 4 years Army, full disclosure. Dave, you're 20 years in the Air Force, aren't you?
25,
okay. So we've got a lot of veterans here, and I'm not for it. I remember the original lottery that was supposed to help the school system. You know, I'm from a family of teachers. I was for anything that would help education. And they lied to us. They got the lottery in, and then they started removing the exact amount from the general fund that the lottery was producing. It was simply a way to get the lottery passed, which I consider to be a voluntary tax on the mathematically challenged. And, you know, There was a certain package of benefits that veterans were promised when I enlisted. I'm happy with the original deal we made.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need a lottery ticket. And I have no problem with people gambling if they choose to do so, if they want to go to Tunica or Vegas or Atlantic City. But I don't believe the government should be involved in the business of gambling. That's not what the government's there for. And I think this is just a... Frankly, I'm wondering what in the world our legislators were thinking when they passed this thing. They're giving implied endorsement of it simply by passing it through both houses and putting it out to the voters.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And
Doreen,
you know, what in the world are they thinking?
Doreen.
Well, what I think, and, you know, I did not serve. Unlike you guys, I went down to enlist when I was 17, and they're going to ship me out. And the first experience that I had with the military, so I backed away from it right quick. But I have immense respect for those who have put their life on the line to fight for our freedoms. And I love our country. I'm so American that it just flat out hurts what's happening to it. But I think that any lottery ticket is just an invitation for bureaucrats to benefit from the administration of the funds and from all of their, you know, little inside deals as they're given these funds by people who are, as Mike pointed out, mathematically challenged. I'm 100% against this, as I am also against the lottery tickets that are supposed to help public schools. It doesn't happen. It's a big lie. And I would be for anything that, you know, this money actually goes to veterans, you know. I think that we have a despicable VA system for the most part. And I've been dealing with it with my father, and it upsets me to no end. But we can't play on emotions and effectively give a tax to the mathematically challenged. You know, that's I think it's a bad idea.
I hate lotteries.
What do you think?
I hate state lotteries in general. I'll vote against anything that has anything to do with the state lottery. The state has no business in the market of gambling. They have no business marketing this to those in society who can least afford to play the game. And that's exactly what they do. Now, by the same token, I hate to hear, and again, we're talking about a group specifically. I'm talking about a group in Southwest Missouri that Ike mentioned earlier that is against this for one reason and one reason only. They suggest that it creates a special class of citizens. Well, brothers and sisters, I'm here to tell you, veterans are a special class of citizens. They frankly are. And no one agrees with that more than someone who is not a veteran and looks at the freedoms that they have in this country because of veterans. But at the same point, I agree with Ike. I got what I signed up for. I want people to remember that we're a special class of citizens because you made some agreements with me, and now because you don't think I'm a special class of citizen, you're trying to renege on some of those agreements. Don't do that, but I did get what I signed up for. You pay me a nice pension. Thank you very much. You take care of my health care as you agreed to. Thank you very much. But I'm not one of those guys who lives with a leg because of what I gave for you, taxpayers. I'm not one of those guys who lives with PTSD because of what I did for you, taxpayers. I'm not one of those guys who lives with some Agent Orange illness because of what I did for you, taxpayers. I expect you to take care of those folks, and that costs money.
Okay.
However, okay. We have other sources of money than a state casino. And I am opposed to a state casino, and so I'm mm-hmm. voting no. I'm voting
yeah, let
no.
Let the Indians have the casinos.
Yeah, Yeah. So I think we're in unison on this one.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to point out, unabashed plug, but for those who have enjoyed the free-for-all tonight, both Ike and Doreen will be speaking at the Preppers and Patriots Expo.
Excellent.
And if you're interested in Veterans Affairs, Joyce Riley will be speaking there, and she's, Doreen, would you say she's definitely one of the biggest experts on Veterans Affairs and Veterans Health in the country?
I would say that she's one of the biggest experts on veterans' health in the country. I would say so. She's her dominant issue, of course, the one that brought Joyce to the fore, is the depleted uranium exposure and the Iraq syndrome that came from
Iraq War
that.
Syndrome, yeah, Gulf War syndrome,
yes.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I personally know several PTSDs. I personally know several Gulf War syndromes. I personally know several Agent Orange illnesses. And I'm going to tell you, we need to take care of those people. We as a group need to recognize that they are a special class of citizen, like it or not, and we need to take care of them. We don't need to build a state lottery to do that, though, in my opinion.
We need to do that as we are able, and the Veterans Administration, the federal government, needs to honor its agreements.
That's right.
And, you know, it goes back to a lot of things that happens in government, period, especially at the local level. You know, we went through this here in Laclede County, and a $32.5 million school bond for a school, I won't get into it a lot, but for less than 1,000 kids, it's going to be $32.5 million. But anyhow, it's about priorities. Instead of raising more money in a family, if you can't always go get more money, you have to prioritize your spending. And that's exactly what our governments need to start learning to do, is to prioritize their spending. And there's a lot of private, here in Laclede County, private money came out for a football field and some other things for the school. But where's the private funding for these other things that are really necessary, you see? So it's about priorities, and we need to start learning to prioritize where our money's going.
That's absolutely right. And that message right there, Ike, flows all through everything we've talked about now. It flows all through Amendment 1. It flows through Amendment 2. It flows through Amendment 7. It flows a lot through Amendment 7. It flows through Amendment 8. It's about, and if nothing else keeps and holds after this is all said and done, the grassroots liberty-loving patriots together, it has got to be the money issue. Money is power, and too much power in the government is represented almost always by too much money.
Consolidation of power.
Right.
Yeah.
There has to be a balance.
Okay, Doreen. We're going to wrap up. I want to thank you for coming along. I've enjoyed the discussion. I love you, and I appreciate you. And when you and I agree, and when you and I disagree, it is extremely important to have the discussion. I think no more or less of you when we agree than I do when we disagree. And I want to let you know how much we appreciate you dropping in tonight.
Well, thank you very much. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
I would suggest, by the way, that folks go to prcnews.org and sign up for the RSS feed to get updates.
Oh, yeah, she's gone, and I should have let her get a plug. Doreen, call us back. I want you to get a plug in for your stuff, Ike. Thanks for stopping by. It's always interesting. You bring a good perspective to things. You and I are in agreement, I think, on 1. We're all in agreement on 7. I think we're all in agreement on 8. And 5. So keep up the good work down there. Keep that Agenda 21 thing going. I'll see you on the 16th up here at the Roundtree.
Absolutely, and I need to start making this a little more often if I can. Come on every so often and just update folks on what's going on. Get involved in this anti-Agenda 21 movement, folks. It's
yes.
working. We are working. We are accomplishing things, and I think that's vital in the grassroots effort that we have some accomplishments, and we absolutely do have some accomplishments, but there's much, much more to do. Evil will never stop until our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ returns, so we have to keep fighting it. And go on Facebook if you're on there, Missourians Against Agenda 21. Like our Facebook page. There's a lot of good information on there. And then try our website, eyesona21.org. David, Mike, thank you very much for having me this evening.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Good night. All right, Mike. Spirited, as always, and interesting.
Boy.
Like I said, a necessary debate. I don't find it unhealthy at all that once in a while we get a subject that divides the libertarians from the conservatives, or divides the to some extent even those who are on the same even on the same spectrum of this side of the fence. There are. And that is in my mind the essence of the democratic republic, is that there are those things that even we when we get into the heat of some of this, I like to point out that you never heard the level of name calling that went on at times like you did between say Jefferson and Monroe.
Well, no, and I was just thinking Jefferson and Adams had major disagreements.
They did, and a couple of guys went out, and one of them got shot.
Burr was shot by Hamilton. And in the early 1800s, there were a couple of instances of fistfights in the House of Representatives and Congress. And
absolutely.
One time, a senator pulled a pistol on another.
I think it's not entirely unhealthy. I think it's a necessary debate. I think we need to have these discussions. I think the last thing we need to do is not have the discussion for fear of hurting someone's feelings or of someone not liking one another anymore. I think we're all grown ups. I think we'll all. I have a favorite quote that I use a lot on letterhead and business card from Jefferson that basically says, and I'll paraphrase, I can't get it word for word, but I don't let politics or religion or philosophy come between me and a friend. We can discuss it, we can hammer it out, we can have different opinions, but I will never let it affect what I think of you, and that goes for my conservative friends, who we share a lot of the same ideas, and it goes for my liberal friends, with whom I share very few ideas. That's just the way I feel about it.
Oh yeah, I agree, and of course Ronald Reagan said, "The man who agrees with me 80% of the time is my ally and not my enemy."
Right.
No. And the PRC is fond of pointing out that it's issue-oriented, not candidate-oriented.
Right.
And there have been times when we were with one particular office holder on an issue and then against him on the next and then with him again. So depends on the issue.
And I want to say that. I want to say that in my final plug for Missouri Grassroots Coalition, who graciously sponsors this hour. And an hour on Tuesday night with Cynthia Davis, an hour on Wednesday night with Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, and us twice a week on Friday and Saturday night. I felt like it was the candy hour, the Mike and Ike show there for a while. I kind of enjoyed that little that little thing going on there. But anyway, I want to say this about Missouri Grassroots Coalition. They are exactly what Mike and I were just talking about. It is an umbrella group of everyone who considers themselves a patriot and constitutionalist and wants to be involved. And when I say that understanding that there are going to be differences of opinion. If you're a libertarian, you're welcome, because you believe in limited government, because you believe in fiscal responsibility, because you believe in personal responsibility, because you believe in the freedoms that are inherent in the human being, and the inherent government responsibility to protect those rights and freedoms. If you are a right-to-lifer, you don't agree with the libertarian on some of the issues that you think are vitally important, yet you're in favor of smaller government, you're in favor of fiscal responsibility, you're in favor of personal responsibility, you belong in Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We all belong together. It is that simple. We're not going to win this war without understanding that us libertarians have to reach out to the theocratic right, to the middle of the roaders. It's going to be a coalition. You people on the far right, you people on the religious right, you Constitution Party thinkers, you better understand that we're not going to win this war unless you reach out to those who agree with you, like Mike said, 80% of the time. It just really is that simple. And everyone is welcome, everyone who believes in the four principles: smaller government, fiscal responsibility, personal responsibility, and the government by constitution, is welcome to bring their group to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We don't charge dues. We don't make money. All we do is facilitate the discussion. That's all we're there for. Now let me tell you, there are people like Doreen. There are people like Gretchen Logue. There are people like Ron Calzone, who, unlike you and me, who work 40 hours a week, who get up in the morning, who eat some breakfast, who go to work, who come home, who take care of our families, who do things like that. And these people do all those things too. But who, as their passion, spend time. Dave Flemons comes to mind. Spend all of their time on one issue. Well, this is a beauty of a place like Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You can't spend all your time on one issue. You can't understand everything there is to know any more than I can about Amendment 1. Everything there is to know about Amendment 7. Everything there is to know about gun rights and what's happening in Missouri. Everything there is to know about right to life and what's happening in Missouri. Everything to know about Agenda 21 and what's happening in Missouri. Everything to know about Common Core and education and what's happening in Missouri. But these people do. And they come here and they are an invaluable resource available to you at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Because they spend all their time on these single issues. So get over there, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org or join us on Facebook at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, spelled out. Mike, it's been a pleasure again, and I'm looking forward to our time together in the future. Thank you for coming along and jumping in.
We've got the neurons firing tonight.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay. Have a great night. Listen, folks, we'll be back again next week. Cynthia's here on Tuesday, and Lisa's here on Wednesday. Mike and I will be back Friday and Saturday with something just as exciting and just as spirited. Good night, and take care. God bless you all.
There are so many contradictions. All these messages we send keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you. Learn to be